Dinosaur Podcast returns, and hopefully this is recording.
Yeah.
Hi.
Last time,
hi, everyone.
It did not. Hi.
Hi, everyone. Welcome in to this week's edition of the PDP, your friendly Colorado Rockies podcast. This is the 80th episode
number
of this
80.
Show.
That is 80. A round number.
That's 20 away from 100.
That's 40 more than 40.
What? How? How do numbers work? I don't get it. Welcome. We don't have a number for episode number 80.
No, we don't.
We don't have a jersey number. But what we do have is a loaded show, and we're going to get to it very quickly here. We actually aren't going to talk a lot about the All-Star break, Futures game first half. We'll save some of that.
Millennials.
So we'll talk about it. Millennials, you know, ruining the world.
Yeah.
Brexit, maybe we'll break that down a little bit later on. Theresa May taking over as the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. But what we
40,
are going
48. Yeah. Good for that.
What we are going to do, yeah, the Rockies 40 and 48, wrapping up a little bit over the first half of the 162-game season, but coming out of the All-Star break now, 8 games under 500. They're like a billion games back because it's an even year. But we are we're going to have a lot of conversation about Rockies prospects at the Class A advanced level with
the Modesto Nuts.
Bobby DeMuro from Purple Row will join the show. We're going to talk a lot about Rockies prospects in Modesto as well as the Cal League, and just kind of the minor league life of some of these guys. We'll get updates on some of the top young talent, some guys who are flying under the radar. We'll even hear about guys like Tyler Matzik who are on the comeback trail. But we had a very lengthy conversation with Bobby. We were going to kind of have our own first segment to get things started. We're going to talk a little bit more about the first half, maybe give you some ideas about the trade deadline coming up and all that sort of stuff. But we got some time before that.
Yeah, just a few quick notes. The
yeah.
Rockies,
go for it.
They are 16 games back at 40 and 48. That is the second most games they've ever been back from first place through 88 games in their entire franchise history. The most since 2005.
And they're in third place in the division
place.
Right now.
Yeah. And it's also the best they've been at the All-Star break since 2013. But a couple of quick notes that I noticed pitching wise in the first half pre-All-Star break, the Rockies this year have the third fewest walks at the All-Star break in franchise history, only behind the 07 squad and the 95 squad, by the way, made the playoffs those years.
Interesting.
And they also have the most strikeouts of any previous Rockies team at the All-Star break at 640. How about that?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. So they're going to the playoffs, and maybe
I'm just saying
that
they're going to win the World Series. Their ERA is at 5.08 is actually middle of the road, which is saying something.
Oh, God.
it's the 12th team. Best ERA out of 24 years before the All-Star break for the Rockies at 5.08.
Cool, guys. So good.
Yeah.
So awesome. So we'll talk a lot more about the first half, some reflections on the Rockies are on pace as of right now for a 6-win improvement over 2015, and what that means. We'll talk about that a little bit going forward. But, yeah, we had a very lengthy conversation, a really fun conversation with Bobby. We give Bobby a whole lot of crap. Bobby is among our favorite human beings on the planet. And also, in addition to deserving it, the reason that he can take so much crap is because he's such a damn fine gentleman.
Yes, he is.
And so we love Bobby. Bobby's on Twitter. He's at Bobby DeMuro. And we have a really good conversation coming up with Bobby. After that, last week we teased that we were going to talk about international Rockies fans, fans of the Rockies from overseas who got into following the Rockies for God knows what reason. We are going to explain why and how those people got into being Rockies fans, why you would treat yourself to such abuse. We'll talk about that. Next week, though, we're going to dive a lot more headlong into Anthony and I looking back at the first half and previewing some stuff for the second half. We'll talk a little bit about what could be coming up at the trade deadline, all that kind of stuff. But for now, we're going to short this first segment. We're going to dive right in. Bobby DeMuro joins the show right now. For a couple of years now, we've had a partnership with this website that I've heard of, I've never visited, called Purple Row, which is purplerow.com, and apparently it's some reference to something at Coors Field. I don't know. Don't read it.
Deck.
I don't listen to the podcast either. I think it's a terrible show. But there is somebody who, I don't know, at a time was involved or maybe still is, or I don't know, but Bobby DeMuro joins the show. Mr. DeMuro, who the hell are you and what do you do now?
Hey, that was the best intro I've ever received on anything anywhere. This guy might be involved, and we're not really sure who he is. It can only get better from here.
No, Bobby, in Bobby's full explanation, Bobby now has expanded from just being covering the Rockies to now covering all the California League, and tweeting out some really good prospect stuff. If you're a fan of a team that has an affiliate in the Cal League, give Bobby a follow on Twitter, because there's a lot of good stuff coming out of the Cal League. But tell us about kind of your full scope of duties lately, because you've broadened your horizon so much.
There's a lot of Rocky stuff, obviously, and there's a ton of stuff with Purple Row, but it's prospects in that entire league, and that league is we'll say interesting. It's kind of a down year in talent for the league, I think, top to bottom prospect wise but there's a lot of interesting guys there in high A. I mean, you guys know this. You guys were in high A in Myrtle Beach together, right? This is the separation league, as Yency Almonte calls it, the Modesto Nut Starter. He says this is a separation league. If you do well here, you get pushed to Double A, and then you're right there. Then you're a phone call away. So this is kind of the important league where we start figuring out, you know, who's good, who's bad, who might we actually have to pay attention to at Coors Field or wherever one day.
This really is the microbiology 101 class that you took in college when you thought, like, I want to go down this road. And then you realize, like,
I made a terrible mistake.
I do not have what it takes to cut it. Yeah, and that really is – that's high A. And, the Modesto Nuts – Anthony and I were talking before we got on the show today. The Nuts are kind of the forgotten affiliate this year. I mean, there's a lot of talent, obviously, right now in Albuquerque with the promotion of David Dahl. Hartford's been loaded all season. Asheville, Brendan Rodgers is in Asheville. There's a lot of good talent there. Modesto this year is somewhat flown under the radar, which is a little bit strange because there are some big prospects on that team. I mean, Dom Nunez is on that team. Forrest Wall is on that team. Heart eyes emoji. And the pitching staff has some really, really good talent as well. Ryan Castellani comes to mind. Parker French has had a really good season. But who has stood out to you so far from all this Modesto action that you've seen, Bobby?
I think that's what's so weird. You know, I overheard two scouts talking to each other yesterday in Bakersfield. The Nuts are in Bakersfield right now. And they were saying they're there to scout the thing. And they say, you know, this Modesto team is 25 games under 500, but they've got prospects and they've had prospects all year. It's just, you know, prospects don't always translate to winning, and it's a weird season, and they're not, you know, they're struggling in terms of results, but there are exciting guys. I think all the guys you named, Yency Almonte is going to rise in prospect lists. I think MILB has him at like number 28 right now, and that should probably go up. He throws the hell out of the ball.
He was acquired by the Rockies from the White Sox in a deal last year, for people who don't remember, in the Tommy Canley trade.
Yeah.
And that's something, and that speaks volumes to me about Jeff Breidich, about the front office with the Rockies. Yeah, you can trade and you can get prospects, and we can debate endlessly whether or not that was a good trade. But when you do these little trades, Tommy Canley was DFA'd, he was dead weight for the Rockies, and they got a legitimate young minor league arm out of it. Now, does Almonte, you know, transition to be a big leaguer? Maybe, maybe not. But the point is, you got something of value out of nothing for Tommy Canley, and that says a lot.
No, absolutely. There's a couple other guys on this Modesto roster that, you know, we are very familiar with as Rockies fans, namely Tyler Matzek. And you've written a lot about Tyler Matzek this season. His struggles have been well documented from, you know, big league starter back in 2014, the more anxiety issues like he had in the minor leagues, can't find the plate at all. But now he's come back. He's got 23 strikeouts in 17 innings. He's been improving as the season has gone on. What has been the biggest thing for Tyler Matzek that you have seen this year that, you know, he might be able to come back and be the Tyler Matzek that we knew a couple years ago?
I think the biggest thing for Matzek, and it's tough for me to get a read on it, I'm with these guys, you know, a lot. I'm going to see these guys dozens of times this year, but I'm not in the clubhouse every single day, every minute. So it's tough to read. But the thing about him is he fits in. He's with the team. It's not a big leaguer on a rehab assignment. I mean, he's been here for all season now. And he's not better than anybody. He's not isolated. He is one of the guys, even though he happens to have 30 career major league starts or whatever it is. And I think that humility and that willingness to say, I need to start over, I need to be in Modesto, I need to be a minor leaguer again, that's why you're seeing some of the success, because he faced this head on. It's not, you know, oh, I'm here temporarily and screw this place and I can't wait to get out and I'm going to make a comeback. It's like, no, I want to be here. I like the guys. I like being here. The other night in Bakersfield, Josh Fuentes is taking ground balls at third base. Everybody else is walking off the field pregame and they're all going in to get ready. And Fuentes is staying for extra work. And Tyler Matzik comes out and sits down right over at third base and watches every ground ball and is giving him pointers and just watching everything. And it's like, what does Tyler Matzik care about a third baseman, you know? But it's that kind of thing. That's a leader. That's a team guy who's just like, you know what? I'm here and I'm going to make the best of it. And I think that says a lot about his character. And I think it should say a lot about his comeback. He's completely bought into it.
Tyler Matzik, as of right now, by the way, the overall numbers for him, 21 relief appearances for Modesto, an ERA of 3.18, but the command has gotten markedly better since early on. He's thrown 17 total innings. He's now struck out 23 batters over that time while walking 13. And the crazy thing about Tyler Matzik is he's still is only 25 years old. So, like, he's, you know, obviously very old for the level, but there are other 25-year-olds in the Cal League who have never made it past that level for any length of time. So that's a guy who still has a ton of time to get things figured out in his career.
I will say, too, before we move on from him, I've seen a 27-year-old in the Cal League who's throwing the hell out of the ball, a guy who's touching 97, 98 for Visalia. It's like Matzik's got as good a chance as that guy. It's just a different story. And the thing about Matzik, too, and I've noticed this, the command is getting a lot better. There are still days where his fastball is completely lost, but it's a relative lost. Instead of throwing it to the backstop and instead of missing by 10 feet, he's missing by a foot, which is a lot, and you got to adjust. But what he's doing now is he's going to the breaking ball, and he can get the breaking ball over for a strike, and he can throw strike one with the breaking ball. And when he doesn't have his fastball and he doesn't have his best stuff, it seems like he can survive well enough to push the ball forward and to say, hey, this was an okay outing. I need to do better next time, but it wasn't a blow up. It wasn't a setback.
Bobby, before That's we great. Move on to, there's a couple of unheralded guys that we want to talk about, but before we do that, there's some guys who there's going to be a lot of focus on, and there already is a lot of focus on, who have had some ups and downs this season. So let's start on the position player side. Dom Nunez is somebody I have rarely, and this is now my eighth season in minor league baseball, I've rarely heard an organization talk as highly about a prospect, not just from the player development side, but teammates, coaches, people who are just around rosters, as Rockies personnel talk about Dom Nunez. And this year, he's not blown up offensively as of late. He's slashing .230, .330, .285 this season. But last year was awful in the first half with Asheville, and then in the second half was maybe the best hitter in minor league baseball. But the thing everybody loves about Dom Nunez is his leadership and his defensive acumen. And this is a guy who's only been a catcher now for a few seasons, converted middle infielder. What have you seen out of Dom Nunez?
He is this name won't mean anything to Rockies fans, but file it away. There are two catchers in the Cal League who I believe are the toast of the league, the best catchers in the league, and both are major leaguers. One of them is Jose Trevino in High Desert, the Rangers prospect. The other one is Dom. Those two guys, and speaking with those two guys, interacting with those two guys, they are the most mature, the most calm, the most big picture guys I have ever dealt with at this level. They are major leaguers, if only in mentality, and that's, you know, 95% of the damn game is figuring out mentally. He is the most mature guy. He can see everything on the field. He's incredibly smart with pitchers. And somebody like that with his age, I don't worry at all about his slash line, at all about, you know, whatever the deal is, lack of power or strikeouts or anything, just because this is a process and he gets that process. And he's the kind of guy you are happy to have fail, as funny as that sounds, because he's the kind of guy that you know is going to deal with failure well, and you know is going to learn from failure. And if he repeats Modesto to start next year, or if he goes to Double-A Hartford or whatever they have planned for him, it's nothing's going to phase this guy. He is mature. He is a 35-year-old veteran in a 21-year-old kid's body.
Which, you know, you talk about Trevino, that is a very, very high comp, because Trevino coming into this season was one of the top prospects in a system where they know how to graduate really good talent. And, you know, that's what the Rockies obviously need to do, because you walk on a razor's edge, and one of the positions in addition to catcher that they've always struggled to develop is second base. But Forrest Wall seemed like maybe he was the guy who was going to break that mold if he lived up to the ceiling that he had coming out of high school. Right now he's MLB Pipeline's number 5 ranked Rockies prospect. This season, Wall really struggled in May. And everybody kind of started wondering, oh, what's the deal with Forrest Wall? Then just blew up in June. Slashed in 25 games, slashed 330, 358, 466. Since then, he struggled a bit in July as well. So it's been a streaky season for Forrest Wall. What has he looked like?
Aside from Hanson.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there are issues. I mean, his swing can get a little long sometimes. He's prone to the strikeout, but I think that probably changes. And that's another guy like Dom who's incredibly mature. I remember talking to Wall in the middle of that slump in May, and he's a cool guy because you can come right at him if you're honest with him. And I'm like, look, man, you're struggling. You're having a bad month. And he's like, I know. It's part of the process. I'm not worried at all. I want to fail. I know how to adjust. And sure enough, a month later, he adjusts, and he's on just – an insane pace right now. Defensively, it's still kind of a work in progress. The shoulder, he says the shoulder's fine. There's no injuries. There's no issues or anything. And I believe that looking at him throw. But you can tell his arm strength isn't phenomenal, and he's going to stay at second base, which is fine. Or he might move to something like center field, people have talked about, which could be fine. His speed is okay. But that's a guy, just professional approach off the charts, a lot like Dom, very calm, very mature. And you know, he's got the power stroke. I think you're going to see him hit a ton of doubles at Coors Field one day. So it's a process. I think with guys like that, you have to remember Forrest Wall is 20 years old, and he's in high A already. And there's nothing wrong with scuffling a little bit when you're 20 in high A or whatever. And whether he comes back here next year or he does enough for Hartford again, this is a process. These guys are failing, and failure is a good thing in a way for some of these guys because they're learning how to deal with adversity. So, you know, 2 years down the road, if he fails, sure, maybe you write him off. But right now, I think the future is as bright as it has been for him.
He's always got a fallback of being a male model.
you need to stop with that, Tyler. It's getting borderline. Like,
hey,
it's like
he's legal age. It's not like
it's
Bobby
like the obsession
with Cam.
That Bobby has with Cam.
Exactly.
We need to like just move past that. Okay. Just like it's just barely legal now. Okay.
Gross.
So, Bobby, before getting on this podcast, which I'm sure has been a dream of yours your entire life.
A career highlight. Life highlight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is a resume builder for you right now, Bobby. You sent us a laundry list of topics to talk about. Some of them.
We've never had a more high maintenance guest is what we're saying.
Yes, seriously. It went all the way from like why we've let Connor go unchecked for so long to
good question.
Tyler Matzik updates to Pokemon Go. More like Pokemon No, am I right? But there was one that it was 748 of the topics that you actually sent us that kind of caught my eye a little bit. I was
748 of 1300.
Yes. But you mentioned, another Rockies prospect in Modesto, Omar Carrizales. And you said, is he the next Raimel Tapia? And I looked at some of the numbers and you look at, going back to 2014, the Grand Junction, the batting average, 307. Asheville the following year, 286. Modesto this year, back to 302. Not a lot of power, but a guy who can steal some bases. The OPS always right around the 750 mark or above. He is only 21 years old. Tell us about Omar Carrizales. Probably not a guy that people don't really know as well in terms of the Rockies' higher-end prospects, but a guy who, like Raimel Tapia, has put up numbers wherever he's gone in the minor league system.
Well, first off, too, and contextualize Asheville last year. He was hitting 315 last year, and about the last 2 weeks of the season, he went on a horrible slump. He was going to win the South Atlantic League batting title. He was having the year from heaven, and the last 2 weeks, it just got spoiled by a real bad slump. So that 286 might be slightly deceiving. But he is – look, this guy, the first time I saw him, because he came in with numbers to Modesto from the last 2 years – the first time I saw him, he's a little slap hitter. He's a little lefty, no power, you know, nothing special at the plate. And I'm looking at him and I go, what's the big deal? I don't get it. Like this, how is he going to play at higher levels? How is he not going to get killed here? And sure enough, the first couple of weeks he was real bad. And then he started hitting and he never stopped. And he keeps hitting. And he's a little streaky. He can go through a very good week, a very bad week. He's a pretty streaky guy. But the overall result is he's hitting 300, and he'll get up to 315 in another 10 days or whatever. And it's the more I see him, it's like, you know what? Whatever he's doing, it's that Raimel Tapia. You don't know why it works, but it works. It's almost the Juan Pierre. Everything's a slap. He's going to get on base with speed. He's not quite as fast as Pierre, but it's that kind of play. And it just drives pitchers crazy. And he's doing it. He's got a cannon in right field. He truly has a phenomenal arm. So he can play Coors Field. He can play that outfield. And he's got good range because he's extremely fast. And by God, all this guy does is hit. He does it the most quietly I've ever seen anybody do it. And you know, Tapia is a big comp. Tapia is a huge prospect. But Carrizales is fit in that mold. It's interesting to see him. And I got to own it. I was wrong about him early. Early, I thought he was nothing. And all he's done is produce. And you can't, you know, there comes a point where you just can't deny that.
You can't ignore it anymore. Corey Dickerson was the same way. Raimel Tapia now getting to be that point. If Carrizales is the next guy in that lineage, that's great.
And if Keith Lawson thinks he's never going to be anything, you know, he'll be an all-star.
Yeah.
Well, and look at Coors Field, too. Look at how Coors Field plays. If you've got power hitters in left and right or whatever, whenever he gets up, if he gets up, or if you've got David Dahl in center or something, you stick Carrizales in right or in center with his range and his cannon arm, and you say, okay, we got a couple of big boppers who can hit home runs. Omar, you're going to steal some bases. You're going to hit a bunch of doubles because this field is massive and you can fly, and you're going to hit 15 triples a year because you're that fast and your slap hitter is going to hit the ball down the line. Does that work depending on the rest of the construction of the lineup? Absolutely. So we'll see. But, I mean, it's that's somebody who's very impressive simply because he's just quietly figured it out. And it's like, wait a second, we should probably give this guy a little more due than he's been getting.
9 triples leads the Cal League. So, yeah, he's got 16 triples the last 2 years. He's just that kind of guy. If he can find the gaps, he's going to take the extra base.
And Modesto, by the way, is not one of the most hitter-friendly parks in the Cal League. It's far from it, which is kind of ironic that these are Rockies prospects, and you would think, oh, they play in the Cal League. They probably play in some launching pad. Modesto isn't Lancaster. It isn't high desert. Like, it's a fairly evenly playing ballpark.
Yeah, absolutely. Modesto's huge, and he no doubt has a couple triples at home that are huge, but I can't tell you how many bloop doubles I've seen him. He'll bloop a ball over the third baseman's head, and you turn around, and he's on second base. And it's like, wait a minute, you only hit that ball 100 feet, but it doesn't matter. You know, the speed kills, it works. They'll light him up on the base paths. He'll steal. Wes Rogers steals. Max White steals a ton. And there's some good speed, and Carrizales is up there as far as speed goes. The guy has tools. Like, you can't deny it. The guy's got tools.
I talked to Omar a couple of weeks ago for a story on MILB.com. Really impressed with that kid. He's a good one. So you can check that out and get just an idea from him as to how he has been feeling about this season. And, Bobby, there's a couple more prospects that we want to get to before we get to some different topics, shall we say. But tell us about – there is a player in the Rocky system right now who, I will be 100% honest, I had never heard of before this season, who has become a total revelation. Last year was extraordinarily good in 46 games for Class A Asheville, an ERA of 2.93. This season, 32 games between Modesto and AA Hartford, a 2-1 record, a 1.29 ERA, and his name is Jerry Vasto. He's a 24th round pick in 2014 out of something called Felician College in Lodi, New Jersey. This is just Is this guy real? What the hell? Jerry Vasto, this season with Modesto, an ERA of 1.38 in 23 games.
And he's a
10
lefty?
Saves. And he's a lefty. And then gets bumped up to Hartford. And since that, 9 appearances, an ERA of 1 even. He's won both of his decisions. He struck out 14 over 9 innings. He's only walked 1. In his minor league career, 119 strikeouts against 28 walks. Who the hell is this guy?
That is a coup for Rocky's development.
Absolutely.
To get a D3 guy in the 24th round or whatever, and just let him go and get him stronger. He is, his path I compare so far to Carlos Estevez, and obviously they're very different. Vasto throws hard. He doesn't throw Estevez hard. That's another level. But it's a guy who got his high A at the right time, got really hot. Now he's in Double A. And next year, all things being equal, I think you're going to see Jerry Vasto in the major leagues. He is the most aggressive reliever for Modesto all year. Modesto has a couple of pretty decent, interesting relievers. Vasto was the most aggressive all year. He comes at everybody. He's got a dirty slider that he throws real hard, and he can kind of pinpoint it pretty well. And that's a guy who just made the most of his opportunity. It's like, you know, he had a fire lit under him, and he said, I'm a 24th round pick. I'm a senior sign or whatever, and I may not get a lot of opportunities. And so, listen, I got to prove myself. And that's all he's done. He's been incredible. He was a tough loss for Modesto because he was lights out in the ninth inning for them. But he's been incredible, and I think that's a guy, especially as a lefty, throwing about 90 to 94 right now. You're going to see him, you know, taking Boone Logan's job next year or something.
Which, you know, It's going to be the end of an era when the 30 million runs out on Boone Logan. Bobby, let's move on to a couple of big topics that we have wanted to discuss with you for quite some time, such as, quote, and again, these were submitted on Bobby's pre-approved list of topics that were acceptable to discuss. And
yeah,
his Trumpian,
you should have seen the writer on this guy.
His Trumpian way. We had to give him only blue M&Ms in the green room. It was very weird. But I do actually want to know the answers to some of these questions, such as, quote, if you turn back time exactly 10 years, knowing what you know will happen in the ensuing decade, would you rather be O.J. Simpson or Harambe the Gorilla?
I think the answer is obvious, right?
I think so.
It's the gorilla.
Yeah, it totally is.
Yeah.
Which is, that dude got, in the words of Marshawn Lynch. Like, he got blasted away at a zoo, and yet still, I would take,
listen,
he probably had a sweet life before that.
Harambe went down doing what he loved. Okay.
That's true. Maybe attacking children.
Yeah.
But think about
that's
it.
His big passion.
Listen, he lived 10 years without, you know, having to go for food and worry about evolution, and he was in the zoo, and it was probably boring, but he lived a long time, and then the end was, you know, not so cool, but it's better than what OJ's going to deal with.
For, like, his whole life, my God. All right.
I mean, I don't know. Is that wrong? I think everybody I've talked to has said Harambe, so I think that that's a consensus at this point.
It's got
to
be Harambe. I mean, although I feel like OJ, especially after watching Made in America, I feel like OJ is probably soaking it up. Like, you know, he's getting another rush of fan mail these days because of the Cuba Gooding Jr. story and then the Made in America. Like, I'm sure he's kind of eating it up, but that's because he's a delusional psychopath.
Like the yard goats?
So,
oh.
Eat it up.
Eat it up.
Okay, your turn, Anthony.
Well, speaking of me, number
I love this question.
Yeah, number 308. If I could fight 100 duck-sized Anthonys or one Anthony-sized duck, which one would I fight?
I think, I don't know about you guys, and Anthony, I think you would probably pick the duck because it would be weird to see 100 of many of you.
Mini-me? Yes, that would be terrifying. I have nightmares about that.
I think, you know, I went back and forth on this last night when I was preparing for this interview because it was such a big deal. I consulted some, you know, PR people about it. I think the right answer
is... You're reading
is
The Art of the Deal by Donald Trump.
I think the right answer is the Anthony-sized duck.
Okay.
Only because...
So.
Well, here's the thing. So first off, it's a big duck, and it's got a big beak. But, like, you've got a fighting chance. Like, if you can get it right, maybe you're safe, you know? And 100 is a lot. But I also don't want to hear 100 mini Anthonys with a really deep voice. Could you imagine 100 of those?
I had to work next to one of them for almost 100 games, just one of them for almost 100 games one summer, and it almost drove me to the brink of just pulling a Harambe and trying to attack a child and get shot. You know, that's what happens. I will say, though, that one Anthony-sized duck would probably be easy just because I know how soft Anthony really is when it comes to fighting. I mean, like, Anthony and I had some real rumbles in the jungle. Like, that's basically our jobs were broadcasting and then also just beating each other up senselessly. And he's pretty weak. Like, it's a pretty easy.
Well, but hang on. Here's the distinction. It's Anthony size, but it has all the attributes of a duck.
But ducks are cute.
Yeah,
but said a goose.
Mean.
Well, yeah, but if you would have said a goose,
geese are mean.
They're horrible. Yeah. Geese are the worst, man. Yeah,
I don't know.
Okay.
It seems like all birds have no soul to me.
Yeah,
all
what is wrong
are
with
just
birds?
Like, stay away.
Birds are dicks, man. I don't like them. I don't like them at all.
What did we do to birds that made them like?
Yeah,
you know,
like you can fly. You can get around all of us. What's your problem?
I think are they being passive aggressive about airplanes? Do you think that's it?
Maybe that's it. They're like, we figured that maybe we could partner on something, but it's okay.
We do this naturally, guys. You had to, you know, construct this, you know, 20-ton aircraft.
You had to rip off our design, but okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Wright Brothers, my ass.
Yeah,
that's true.
You think they just want, like, a cut?
Maybe they are.
Is that what it is?
there was royalties for the wings.
Clearly, you guys were looking at us when you did this.
Oh my God, that is true. Maybe we've been thinking about this wrong the entire time.
The whole time.
I have two questions that are the most Bobby questions that we could probably ever ask. One. Johan Vlande, no longer a member of the Rockies organization. Your thoughts / emotions, and keep in mind, we can't include 40 minutes of sobbing. And
sorry,
number two, what's the deal with the Bakersfield Blaze and how accurately they have exposed your true personality?
Well, number two, I'm going to have to refer to my public relations team. Number one, Johan, man. Listen, I'm happy for him because he's, what, 30 years old now? And the third time, you know, it didn't quite work out. He didn't throw as well this year in the shorter stint. So go get money. Go to Korea. He's going to make, what, $200,000? Like, go get it. That's a good thing. Congratulations.
Be treated like a king, by the way. I had a really good friend who played in Korea, actually is still playing in Korea, and the way that the KBO treats, especially its international import players, is major. It's better than Major League quality, with the living arrangements they get. They have personal drivers and, you know, translators if they need them, whatever it is. So when you're an international player in Korea, as Willian Rosario, Johan Vlande, those guys, it's a far better life than kicking around in Albuquerque.
I think, you know, put it in reference to, I was talking to my dad of all people about this last week, and look, this is a guy from the Dominican Republic. He was in the minor leagues forever. The Phillies gave up on him. The Braves gave up on him. The Rockies gave him a shot. He gets to the big leagues. All things being equal, considering his role, he really did pretty well the first 2 years. As a long reliever, he knew exactly what he was supposed to do, and it doesn't work out this year. And now he's going to Korea, and he's going to make a lot of money, and he's at a totally different culture halfway around the world. What a life. Like, what a career. Like, would we all not trade what we're doing for something that? You know?
Absolutely.
It's, I mean, good for him. He's probably never coming back to the big leagues because he's 30 and whatever. But he got what did he get? 100 games or something? 50 games? 40 starts? I mean, that's, you know, that ain't bad.
Do you have a shrine built to him with candles or anything in your place?
I have one jersey. I don't fanboy out too hard about anything because, you know, your heart's gonna get broken. But I do have a Johan Vlande jersey.
That is incredible. That is at you and Johan Flande's mom.
I think you're the
only two ever said.
His family follows me on Instagram, and they're just, like, really cool people. Like, they're normal people. I think he lives in Atlanta in the offseason, on the Instagrams. But, like, I think it's his brother and his wife or his girlfriend or whatever. I think it's those two who follow me on Instagram, and they're awesome people. They're, you know, hey, good for them. You know, go enjoy Korea. Go do your thing. Hopefully play a couple more years out there. Save some money and you know, hang out, man. You earned it.
All right, Bobby, we're going to get you out of here on this one because I love this question. I feel like it very well summarizes kind of where we all are, especially, you know, the three of us as being prospect nerds and minor league nerds. But, you know, you're a guy who's in the trenches.
Did I get out of the Bakersfield Blaze question? This is
well, I mean, you said you had to refer it to your legal team.
Tyler was trying to wrap it up here, yeah.
Oh, no, please, take it away. If you were inviting this criticism,
no.
Then I would love to
go from one thing that Bobby holds in such high esteem, like Johan.
To the polar opposite.
So
that team probably isn't going to be around next year, and I feel bad about, you know, that's sad.
Yeah, let's discuss that because that is a possible reality. Right now, there are 10 teams in the California League. There are 8 teams in the Carolina League. This goes back, really, in all reality, I think this goes back decades. But the California League, it's been proposed, I know at least with the current president of minor league baseball, this has been on the table for a while. And that's Pat O'Connor, by the way, who's the president of minor league baseball, that there have been discussions of contracting 2 teams from the California League, adding 2 teams to the Carolina League. The machinations of that have been complicated for a while, but right now there is a market, at least in the Carolina League, that wants a team very badly. That's Kinston, North Carolina. The city of Kinston has been in negotiations with the Texas Rangers to lease Granger Stadium, which is my favorite ballpark in the entire planet.
I love it.
So this is a distinct reality that Bakersfield and I believe High Desert is the other one
because
in conversation.
High Desert had a lot of issues with their city and with
the city sued the team and vice versa. Yeah.
This is the start of it.
So the Cal League, there are some dire straits in the Cal League. So please continue. But that's the background on this.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. High Desert is the Rangers, so they're probably going to go. The High Desert ownership group, I believe, is paying $1 a year to lease their stadium right now.
Which seemed like a good deal when High Desert was doing okay economically as a region. Yeah. And then over the last 15, 20 years or so, that region has collapsed economically. And so the city is basically forking over hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to keep a minor league team there that draws not that well.
Yeah, and the city is bankrupt or is going bankrupt. Adelanto is having huge problems. So that team's going to go. I'm almost sure of it. And then the other one is Bakersfield. They can't get a new stadium. Nobody comes to the games. It's a quirky little, you know, I don't know if you guys have ever been to Sam Lynn. It's awesome, but it's just, it's old. And I love it, but it's not viable. And the other issue here is Lancaster. Lancaster is an amazing facility, but it's that stupid stadium where the wind blows out and every game ends 15-14. And from what I understand, the Astros are like, wait a second, we don't need to be here.
Yeah.
We do not need to do this.
It's ruining their development. Yeah.
Right. Last night in Lancaster, it was a 10-9 game by the end of the third inning, I think.
Good God.
That stadium, and it doesn't play as big as you think. It doesn't, when you're there, it doesn't feel like it's as short. High Desert is the fence is like 100 feet away. It's insane. But both those stadiums are just, the baseball's not good enough. You want to leave because the development is so messed up. And what that's going to do is that Astros are going to move out of Lancaster. And when they move, I believe Bakersfield, that team or that Mariners entity, is going to go into Lancaster. So effectively, you'll keep Lancaster and you'll lose Bakersfield and High Desert. And, you know, down the road, I don't know how viable the Cal League is long term. They've got some weird cities. Unless they can get to the coast or get to some other big markets, we'll see in another, you know, 20 years.
So what does that mean for you and the Bakersfield Blaze? It's what all the people.
Well, it means I stopped getting owned on Twitter. That's what the hell it means. They did. I don't remember what it was, but the first April, you know, series, that first series that Modesto was there, the first week of April. I don't remember what the tweet was, but they tweeted something funny at me. You know, something where they were trying to own me on Twitter just to mess around. And all the Purple Row guys picked it up, and they were immediately. And they were like, wait a second, is this team mad at you? Like, what, are you fighting with a minor league team? And I was like, no, the guy is sitting right here. Like, we're joking around. But it took a life of its own on, and I've been owned by many a minor league team. I will say that Visalia and Inland Empire have come to my defense multiple times.
Wow.
So I got two in my corner and one against me. I'm doing pretty good.
Okay. Bakersfield just got nothing to lose, man. They're just out there. They're out there going rogue. They're Sarah Palin at the end of the 08 campaign.
And that's the thing. You know, somewhere like Bakersfield, in the long run, it doesn't matter. It's minor league teams move. But it's a great front office. They do things the right way. They're funny. They're laid back. It's a great, like, they are what minor league baseball should be. There are all these beautiful facilities in minor league baseball that are brand new, and they're gorgeous, and they're clean, and, like, that's all great. But minor league baseball should be a crappy facility. You know, it should be a weird, unique facility. And something like Bakersfield, when you lose that, I think you lose a little bit of that culture. And I'm not sure that that's a good thing.
So keep an eye on that development, because it'll be an interesting one to follow over the next season or couple of seasons, whatever it is, in the Cal League and the Carolina League. You can follow our good pal, Bobby DeMuro. He's on Twitter at Bobby DeMuro. DeMuro is his last name. And Bobby, I can't believe we haven't done this before, and we will be doing it again before the end of the season, and hopefully there's some more wins to talk about in Modesto, but it's all about development. It's not about record or results. It's all about getting these guys better, and thanks a ton for all the updates and the info, and best of luck continuing to get owned on Twitter by everyone.
I don't know if I appreciate that last comment, but thank you. I will say going away, something for people to remember if you follow the minor leagues. Obviously, stats don't tell the whole story, and people know that, but stats tell part of it. But I think people need to remember the development aspect of this, and when Forrest Wall fails, when Ryan Castellani fails, he's having a very good year. But when somebody
he's
like
the
that
other guy
fails,
we didn't ask about.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the answer. He's great. That's it.
It's a lot of fun. A lot of fun to watch. Former second-round pick, he's not on the lips of people the way a lot of these other pitching prospects are, but Ryan Castellani's really good.
Really good, really smart. Another very, very smart young guy. I can't say enough about the Rockies in terms of the people. The players that they're picking in terms of how they are as people. They are nice. They're respectful. They're really smart. They can go deep and talk real baseball. It's not cliches. They understand and they get it. And sure, it's just the media. Who cares? But that reflects on them as people and their intellect as players, and that matters. So Castellani's at the top of that list. He is a smart, smart guy. But back to the last point to kind of wrap it, you know, failure is part of development. They want these guys to fail. I remember talking to Chris Forbes, one of the front office guys in the spring training, and he was like, look, we want to put these guys in a situation where they're going to fail, and then they're going to have to figure out how to get better. It's not about coddling them. This is why Carell Prime is already up in AA, even though he didn't have a great year in Modesto last year. You want to put pressure on these guys, and you want to see what they're made of. So, you know, when somebody fails, when a forest wall fails, that's what's going on. That's why it's happening. How does he respond next year? Where does he go from there? That's the bigger picture.
Bobby DeMuro, again, is on Twitter, at Bobby DeMuro. You can follow him there. You can also follow the Bakersfield Blaze. They are at Bako Blaze, and please do, because we love them for their online persona. Bobby, this is seriously, it's been so much fun, man, and we'll do it again soon here in the second half of the Cal League season.
Awesome, man. Thanks a lot, guys.
And a big thanks to Bobby, the old Bobby DeMuro, who is on Twitter. He is at Bobby, DeMuro is his last name. So big thanks to Bobby. I still am unclear as to who the hell he thinks he is or what he does. I don't know who he works for. I don't know. Even though he explained it, I'm not going to – I don't know.
Some things just shouldn't be answered, and you're not going to be happy with the answer you get anyway. So let's just move on.
That's true. That is true.
Yeah.
So big thanks to Bobby for joining the show. So as we turn to begin wrapping this thing up, we're going to do something that we talked about doing last week, didn't get to last week, which is good because we got additional submissions in on it. And I'm pretty pumped about this topic. We put out a call for this last month on the old Twitter machine, asking people who are fans of the Rockies overseas to send us their stories as to why. Mostly because, like, if we didn't have to subject ourselves yeah. to doing it, why would we?
Why the hell would you do that?
Yeah. Why would you choose ever to do that? So, we're going to kick things off. We're going to head to the Oceania region of the world, which one of the most beautiful regions of the world. We're going to go to New Zealand, and friend of the PDP, Ryan Eggers, who is on Twitter, and Ryan interacts with us on a pretty consistent basis because he's awesome and gets to watch the Rockies at crazy hours. We'll get to that here in a minute. Quote, here's Ryan's email. Quote, throughout my younger years, watching American sports is very rare. Actually, a lot of people think they're boring because of all the timeouts and ad breaks, which is not inaccurate.
Not on wrong. Yeah.
One day, I stumbled onto ESPN, and that's where I saw the Denver Nuggets playing, and that's how it all started. But you can kind of tell, it must have been a bit ago that the Nuggets were on an internationally televised.
Just a tad, yeah.
Unless they were, you know, playing the Cavs. 2011 was the first year I really started to become a fan of Colorado sports, and my love of the Rockies began. I was shocked/excited at how many games they would play in a season. That is a very cool feature of people who end up following baseball from overseas, because baseball is unlike really anything else on the sports calendar anywhere, which is really cool. Yes. Ryan continues and says, the first 2 years I mainly just followed the games on Gamecast, so I didn't actually watch that much, except for the very rare TV game, about two a year, which surprises me. They get two a year in New Zealand to begin with.
Yeah.
2013 was where I really got into it, as I got my MLB TV subscription and all its struggles. I started to watch a lot of games and have bought a subscription for every year since. I always like the night games better, as they usually started about 12:40 p.m. for home games in local time for him in New Zealand. But the afternoon games are a struggle, with the occasional game starting just after 5 a.m. One in Cincy this year started at 4 a.m. That was that weird, like, daytime. It was like an 11 o'clock first pitch or something.
Yeah.
Now 6 years after it all started, still looking for that first winning season, and I'm liking what I'm seeing from this year's team, as they seem to have a lot more fight than previous teams, and can battle back from that heartbreaking defeat that I've more than gotten used to. My favorite ex-Rocky would be Josh Rutledge, which I love, because it's obviously a hair vote.
Yeah.
You know, and I would vote.
I mean, one of the best flows in Rocky's history, yes.
Yeah, arguably the greatest flow in the history of the team. And currently Mark Reynolds and Mr. Cool, Wonnie Tolters. I've never been to America, but if I ever do, going to a Rocks game would certainly be a priority. That is from Ryan Eggers, New Zealander and fan of your Colorado
Rockies. That's pretty damn sweet.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Next up, Mark Cazzarato, who I don't believe Mark – Mark has to be a follower of ours on Twitter, because that's where we put out the call for this, but I'm not sure what Mark's Twitter handle is. But anyway, Mark's got a good story, and he says – he leads his email by saying, I've mentioned this on Purple Row before, but here's my story, and I'll try to make it a little bit succinct because it's a good and lengthy story. But basically – Started off in the late 1990s. Mark was 23 years old, he said, in 1997. Lost a job and got dumped, or maybe he dumped a girl, lost a girlfriend also. In pretty short order, he said, and just couldn't sleep. So he started flipping on TV and noticed that on Channel 5, the brand new low-rent terrestrial TV channel, as he dubs it, they were showing baseball between 1 and 4 a.m. twice a week. And I love this next sentence. He says, I know nothing about baseball other than a vague sense of what it is. The teams are a mystery to me. The rules doubly so. The stats barely register. But for some reason, I find it comforting and seek it out. I love that so much.
That's pretty awesome.
I love that so much. Okay, so fast forward. 5 years later. Mark's fallen in love with a young Yank lady, a young American girl. She's gone back to the States after they shared a summer together. His brother calls and says he's...
Summer loving.
Had me a plan.
I don't think
it's a British thing. Cucumber in spread cheese on a biscuit.
Summer loving.
I'm okay with British food.
Some crumpets.
I've been to London a few times, and like it's grossly overpriced, but I kind of like it. It's like all heavy gravies and meat and stuff. I'm okay with it.
Oh, so it's like the South.
Yeah, not as good.
Okay.
not as good, but far less casual racism.
But
so that's
both
good.
Want to exit the country
true.
Or the union
or
that
the union,
brought them.
Which they
all
are
the great things
apart.
About them.
That is true. That is very true. So Mark
anyway,
continues.
Yeah.
This is 2002. His brother had a well-paid job and said, do you want to go to Vegas for a few days? I got the bill. And Mark goes, well, if we're going to go to Vegas, why don't we go through Denver? They end up stopping over because that's where his girl was. I should clarify that. His girl was studying for her PhD in Denver. They stopped over in Minneapolis, and during a five-hour layover, the World Series was on. They sat at a bar, watched the game, and he says, interest reawoken. 3 years after that, he and the Denver girl, and we all know Denver girls, man. They're the greatest girls. The greatest girls. Well, not the ones who moved here. But JK people. JK,
yeah.
Just ripping on the migrant community in Denver, which is now 95% of Denver. They lived together in London as of 2005. He and
the migrant isn't like the new people moving in, not like, you know, Mexican immigrants.
Oh,
right?
No, not like the poor people floating through the Mediterranean.
I was gonna say, like, hold on here, Tyler
the
Trump.
The domestic migrants. No, the only people that I like to rip on are white people.
Yeah.
Because white people are the worst. said as a white man. 2005, he and the girl living in London, they go to Massachusetts to visit her mother, and they decide they should go to a baseball game. There weren't any big league games as an option. So, quote, we traveled a few miles to a small town I've never heard of called New Britain to watch the Twins AA affiliate take on the Red Sox AA affiliate. A couple of players called Pedroia and Ramirez lead off for Portland. Wonder whatever happened to them.
Hanley was still there. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. And young Pedroia.
Yeah. So, like, it looks like the exact same as
yeah,
old
exactly.
Pedroia.
The exact same Pedroia. Just yeah. a little bit more hair. We take a friend, a fervent Red Sox fan, who welcomes my dozen questions per inning. I am fascinated. 2006, the season finishes and my enthusiasm has grown. I need a team to support, but who? The Twins, the MLB team of the Rockettes, first game he saw. The Red Sox, I like their 2004 fairy tale. Or should I support the team from the place that most captured my heart, Denver? As soon as I even had the thought, I knew that's what I'd do. So I started the 2007 season as a Rockies fan, which, as you can imagine, worked out in a way that hooked me for life. And this is Mark's conclusion. Since then, I've avidly followed the sport. I now know at least 95% of the rules, which, you know, side note, I grew up with baseball. I probably only know 95% of the rules.
Yeah seriously.
I know most of the names of the A-ball affiliates in Modesto and Asheville. I read Purple Row religiously and have about 9,000 comments to my name, about half of which say, I'm British, you know. The learning curve in baseball is perfect, both on the field and in the spreadsheets. It's easily become my favorite sport, filling a void left by soccer, which I used to love, but have just drifted away from coincidentally or otherwise over the same time period. But I love reading and talking about it even more than I love watching it, which is lucky, as I get to do so one night a week at most. Why didn't I pick an East Coast team? And
yeah.
I know Mark means that in terms of the time would be easier for him to watch games, but in an existential sense, we all kind of wonder why we didn't pick an East Coast team when it comes to
baseball.
Well,
watching baseball on the East Coast sucks.
Yeah, that's true.
Everything starts so late, especially when now that for
if
me, I'm used to
yeah.
I'm used to Pacific time.
Yeah,
oh my
no.
God, Pacific time is so much better.
I remember my freshman year of college, I went to Washington State, and it was so awesome how the events, like big events, would start at like 4 in the afternoon. was sweet. Yes. Like you're never. Yeah. I was in New York a few weeks ago, and the Rockies were in LA, and first pitch is 10 something.
Yeah, it's like 10:15. Or now, like in San Diego on Friday nights, they do 7:40 first pitches.
Oh,
so it's like
gross.
11 p.m.
That's
like games are starting in your own country.
Why the hell would they do that?
I have no idea.
I remember they moved their game times up a couple of years ago because they said that kids who went to school in San Diego, their parents did not want to fight San Diego traffic, so they would go pick the kids up and like run home, and then they just wouldn't come back for games. So they were like, why don't we move it up? And then they won't have enough time to go home after school in between games.
Like, so they had like a 6 o'clock first pitch?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Cleveland does that or did that during when school's in session. Cleveland does that now too.
Huh.
Yeah, huh. And the Rockies moved up theirs from to 6:40.
Kids in that baseball.
Right. Yeah.
All right, last one. This is from Mike Eaton. Well, last one email submitted, and then we also had a couple on the old Twitter machine as well. But quote, from Mike. Just a quick email to say hello. I'm an avid listener to your podcast, poor Mike, and heard you mention last week that you're planning a segment on international Rockies fans. I live in the UK, a small village called Rackheath near Norwich, which is on the northeastern side. It feels about as far from Denver as anywhere it could be. It's not, though, I've checked. I developed a love of the Broncos in 1987, age 7.
Okay.
I've been a fan ever since. Last year, my wife and I had an opportunity to take our first visit to America, and there was only ever one place I was going to suggest, and she agreed it would be fun. I was at the time slightly disappointed as it was only convenient to go in May, so no football. We did the Broncos Stadium tour, etc., and loved it, which, by the way, very good tour, in case you ever have been interested.
Yeah,
the tour of Mile High was really good. The Colorado Sports Hall of Fame, which is located in Mile High, very disappointing. I went there recently, and it was a big letdown. Anyway, we decided to book tickets to a Rockies game simply because it seemed like something you should do when in America, but neither of us really knew anything past three bases and home runs. I booked tickets for the May 19th game against the Phillies, which the Rockies won, snapping an 11-game losing streak. Mike bringing the good luck from across the Atlantic.
Hey.
And we loved it. I mean, it was incredible. The fans, the stadium, the staff, the game itself, which I'm sure won't go down as a classic, but meant a lot to us. Since then, I've become as diehard a Rockies fan as you can be in 12 months. We wanted to come to Denver again this year, and at one point I was preferring to come to see Tulo return rather than waiting until September to see the Broncos. Sadly, my wife has been unwell for a couple of months, which we wish all of our best to Mike's wife. So our plans are on hold for now. Maybe we'll come later in the year for the playoff run. Hell yeah, Mike. I've invested in MLB TV, which is a godsend, and that's really cool how many people we've heard from that are like, well, you know, I mean, it's my team, and now I get to keep up with them all the time because of MLB TV. Means I can watch most games when I have the chance. I won't lie, parts of the game and some of the statistics and terminology are still confusing to me, but I'm learning. My job has me on the road quite a bit, so I usually listen to the podcast at least twice while out and about. Mike's the coolest, man. I love Mike.
Yeah.
I've tried other podcasts, but it's not the same as the PDP. Woo! Hell yeah, Mike.
You should get out more, Mike.
Mike.
No, that's awesome.
Being subjected to us multiple times in a day. We loved our visit to Denver and cannot wait to return to Colorado, and we'll certainly be taking in more than one game this time around. Love the show. Please keep up the good work. From Mike. Mike could hardly be cooler. And
yeah.
I am so pumped that he got in touch. And for those of you who are, you know, hearing this for the first time and are also internationally based Rockies fans, let us know, because this is it's a title that, you know, is of a topic that I have wanted to discuss for a long time. And it's very cool, because I don't think that there is – people don't really – you have your reasons for following sports teams here. But when you're born elsewhere, you know, you have to gravitate towards something for a certain reason. That so often is just exceedingly random, you know, like, and a lot of it, which I think is really cool. A lot of it is, oh, I became a Broncos fan, or I became a Nuggets fan, or I became whatever, and I just adopted the local sports team. One of the cool responses that we got was from somebody that way, who is also in the UK. That's Phil, and I hope I say your last name right, Phil. Well, maybe it's Hines, but either Hindus or Hines. But Phil responded and said, not a longtime fan or hardcore in any way from the UK. Huge Broncos fan, picked up the local baseball team. And then he said, bit lazy, really. No, I think that's awesome, because you're not just cherry picking, like, oh, I'm going to be a Broncos fan, but I'm also going to be a Yankees fan.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a, you know, a Warriors fan and whatever. Also, one last one, Bert, who is one of our loyal Twitter followers. Bert at Bert John B, J-A-N-B. Bert said, quote, I used to be, but moved to Colorado a year and a half ago, was a high school exchange student in Colorado during the Rockies World Series run in 2007. And by used to be, the question was if you're a Rockies fan outside of the U.S. So Bert used to live. He's from the Netherlands. Bert used to live overseas, now lives here. And it's also amazing how much that 06, to an extent, 07, 09, 2010, that era, it's amazing how much that hooked people.
Well, I mean, that's normal, though. Whatever kind of winning stretch a team has, if someone who has no idea what's going on and the team is winning and the feeling around the team is good and the fans are really excited, if they're in Denver while it's happening, too, and there's a buzz around town about it, yeah, you're going to be drawn in by that. It's a natural reaction you have to something that you see that's actually good and wonderful, and you want to have more of that, which is why we're Rockies fans. We can't.
To be a part, yeah, exactly. We can't have any happiness. But big thanks to all of those people. If you have a story of your own, you can tweet it at us at Purple Dinocast, or you can email the podcast purpledinosaurpodcast@gmail.com.
No, it's kind of like awesome. People in the States, they'll have those kind of stories with like soccer teams in Europe.
Yeah.
There's really no reason why a lot of people would like, oh, I'm a big Arsenal fan or Liverpool or like Sunderland or whatever. Like I'm a big fan of Fiorentina in Italy, because my first experience with Italian soccer was when I was 14 years old. I went to a game with my family, and they were still like in the second division at that time because they'd just been relegated, but they got back now. But I went there, and all like the young like Italian men were getting frisked, you know, for obvious reasons when they went into the soccer stadium.
Oh.
And I walked in like with my family. And like the police like grabbed me and threw me up against like the fence and like frisked me.
And they're like, look at your nose. You must
no,
be
seriously.
A problem
and
person.
Like, and I looked back at my mom and she was like beaming with delight. she was like, oh, it means
you're
looks
one of
Italian.
The locals now.
Yeah, exactly.
You're one of those people.
Yeah, and then I went and studied abroad in Florence when I was in college too. And it only got a little bit stronger there. So yeah, like that, I get some of these stories that have been come out. I like this a lot.
When I lived in Australia, we were the ballpark where the Sydney Blue Sox play is the former Blacktown Olympic Park. It's where the qualifying rounds for baseball were held at the Sydney Games in 2000. Now it's called Blacktown International Sports Park, but it's a big complex, baseball, softball. There's some soccer facilities.
Was that where the D-backs and Dodgers played?
No. So they played at the Sydney Cricket Ground.
That's right.
Which is a big, massive stadium. And Blacktown is way out west of Sydney itself, which kind of presents some problems for attendance and all that kind of stuff. But it's way the hell out there. But actually, the Olympics, they hosted the medal rounds at a stadium on the actual Olympic ground itself called the Sydney Showgrounds. And the Sydney Showgrounds has since been converted. It's a multi-use facility that they use for Aussie Rules football and rugby and concerts and all that kind of stuff. But that was originally constructed as a baseball stadium. So if you're ever in Sydney and you find yourself at the Olympic ground and you go look at the Showgrounds, you can kind of tell, which I think is now a corporately named facility, but you can kind of tell the way the stands are, there's actually a berm in what was the outfield. You can sort of tell, this was kind of built as a baseball facility, which is really cool. But in Western Sydney, we were located directly next door to the training home for Cricket Australia and an Aussie Rules football team named the Greater Western Sydney Giants. And also in Western Australia is a soccer team, a member of the A-League, which is Australia's highest level domestic circuit, the Western Sydney Wanderers. And like two things. One, I still don't know anything about Aussie Rules football, but like, you know, if I'm randomly checking out the Watch ESPN app or whatever an AFL is on, like, okay, I'll check out a Greater Western Sydney Giants game. I don't know what the hell is going on with it. I don't know why they play on an oval. I don't get it at all. But two, you know, the Western Sydney Wanderers, it's one of those things where I had a little bit of a tacit tie to it on one hand, and on the other hand, I love that name. The Wanderers, I think, is amazing. So yeah, like you adopt these teams for just random personal connections, and I think it's really cool hearing that from people who are on the other side of that spectrum. You know, I just don't know why you would pick a team like the Rockies. I respect all of you.
Good,
I respect the hell
you.
Out of all of you for doing it. But oh man, if I didn't have to, I would not have this issue. So
that'll do it, right?
That'll do it. That'll do it for this week's edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. Big thanks to everybody who submitted a story. And again, you can email us, purpledinosaurpodcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us, @PurpleDinoCast, and you can get in touch as well. on Twitter with Anthony. He's at Master Tones, and I am at Tyler Mon. And until next week, send us your Ask PDP questions. Email them, tweet them, whatever. And we will get to those in another week of Colorado Rockies baseball, which hopefully, starting the second half, hopefully it's a good one. Why not?
Yeah. They play a lot of crappy teams coming out of the break.
Yeah.
So
that could be a good thing.
Yeah, Atlanta, Tampa Bay, I think Atlanta again. Like it's their time. It's their time to make a move if they're going to make a move. That's for damn sure.
Oh, man, fingers crossed.
Yeah,
fingers crossed.
Yeah,
all of you.
Yeah, three at Atlanta, three at home against Tampa, four at home against Atlanta.
Man, yeah, that. Please win baseball games. To all of you suffering overseas through it. God, we respect the hell out of you doing it, you know, the middle of the night or the early hours of the morning, whatever it is. You're awesome. And stick with us.
Absolutely.
And, maybe one day we'll all get to pour champagne on each other. Until next week, enjoy the second half start. We'll talk to you then.
Bye.
Bye.
You suck, you suck, you suck, gonna hate. You're the worst person ever, oh yeah.
No, you weren't gonna keep going? Thought that was a good little ditty going on there.
No, it was that was it. That was it. So fuck are we talking about?
I don't know.